Hello and welcome to the Mezlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Panier, host of the Mezlis and author of the Central Asia and Focus newsletter. Kyrgyzstan has a new flag, and many citizens of the country are not happy about that. The manner in which Kyrgyz authorities rapidly proposed, then approved, changes to the flag the country has had for more than 30 years alarmed many. But it also said much about the way Kyrgyzstan is governed now, and that's the topic of our conversation today. And to discuss all this, I am joined by Laila Saitbek, chairwoman of the NGO Freedom for Eurasia and a member of the working group advocating for a global Every Woman Treaty to end all forms of violence against women and girls, and Admir Kurman, who is in Kyrgyzstan and is originally from Kyrgyzstan, but currently works in London as an innovation strategist and business founder. So thank you both for being on the show with me today. Laila, I want to start with you. Let's start with the flag. You know, like I mentioned, this went through very rapidly. When did somebody first propose this, and who do you remember was the one that proposed changing the flag?
I don't remember the exact dates, but I think the first proposals or ideas were circulated sometime at the in the fall of last year, and then afterwards it was really quickly adopted. And Sadır Japarov has actually even made a speech during his Kurultai when he provided his arguments and explanation of why he decided to propose this change of the flag. And strangely, he said that he spoke with his father-in-law, and that his father-in-law has told him that he really doesn't like the way the flag looks. Japarov has also said that the flag looks like, resembles a sunflower, and that people outside of Kyrgyzstan were asking him whether or not we are, you know, as a country, we specialize in growing sunflowers because we have a sunflower on our flag. So it was a very strange process, to be honest with you.
Okay, thank you, Laila. Admir, let me ask you about that. You know, were you growing up in Kyrgyzstan, were you surprised with all the problems in Kyrgyzstan that they face right now that the flag all of a sudden was changing the flag was a topic of conversation?
Yes, well, this is the least problem that we needed to, you know, to be solved at the moment. Because we've got some other things to do in this country. We've got to think about how to grow our economy, how to, you know, to do the trade deals with other countries, how to improve those deals, how to trade with China, how to you know, tackle the geopolitical issues with Russia. And etc. But all of a sudden, you know, we started, you know, discussing this flag issue, which actually we never thought about it before as a problem. But now it's become a national problem for Kyrgyz citizens. And of course, well, this is. The changing the flag is just the next silly decision, which came out of the president's office. Initially, it all began from changing the constitution. We were kind of a parliamentary country based on parliamentary democracy, but then the president Japarov, he just, you know, came around and started changing, you know, our constitution, and then it went up to some other problems, and now we ended up with changing the flag.
Okay, you know, let me ask you a follow-up question here, and we're going to get more into what you were just talking about in the second half of the show too. But you know, the way that they pushed through this change of then the flag, and we going from an idea to becoming approved by the parliament, and then ended up, you know, with a new flag. There was a lot of opposition to this idea, but can you talk a little bit about, you know, the government's reaction? There didn't seem to be much public debate, and at least judging from what was on social networks, it seemed to be an unpopular decision, but the government didn't seem to care about that.
No, they didn't. They don't really care about anything that citizens think or people think about. So they just do what they want to do or they think that they need to do. So there was a lot of opposition in the country, of course, on social media. People, I mean, I don't think you'll find somebody in the Kyrgyz Republic who would you know appreciate this idea or support this idea. There might be a few bunch of people, probably loyal to president, who would support this idea, but the majority, no, they didn't like any single bit of this idea.
Okay, thanks. Lila, you already mentioned a couple of minutes ago that, you know, President Japarov had brought this up at the Kurultai. He was looking to get support. Now, let's back it up a little bit. And I remember we were talking about this at the time. When it first started to go public with this idea, Japarov had all these statements that he made about what the difference the flag would make for Kyrgyzstan by changing the flag. So can you talk a little bit about that? And then we'll get to the parliamentary process of about approving the flag.
Japarov has actually spoke about his belief that when we change the flag, that, you know, all of the problems of Kyrgyzstan will be solved and the country will become very successful, very economically developed, and all of the other problems will be solved through the changing of this flag. He, you know, somehow explained it with a very, you know, that the symbol plays a very important sort of like a, you know, basically magic role, that once we have this new flag, that the life will improve for everyone immediately as soon as that flag will be raised, which is quite... It's quite strange because obviously everybody understands that problems will be solved when somebody, you know, solves them. And, you know, the work gets done when somebody does the job, which has really nothing to do with any, you know, symbolic things such as the flag or, you know, logos or anything like that. The problem, though, is, and he actually even admitted during Kurultai that it was completely his idea, that he spoke with Nurlan Shakiev, the Speaker of Parliament, and talked him into changing the state, you know, symbol, and also asked him to get this through the Parliament as fast as possible. Interestingly, this caused not only the disagreement with this, you know, civil society, with people on the streets, and we saw a lot of interviews that the journalists have done on the streets asking people what they think about this this initiative of the president, and obviously people were just really laughing. It actually has caused disagreement within the sports community. That was an interesting thing as well. And the sportsmen have expressed their opinion and their plans to continue fighting and participating in the competitions under the old flag. And also, you know, there is also the attempts of Sadir Japarov to kind of, you know, give this initiative, you know, a very important spiritual meaning might actually have something to do with the rumors that have been circulating around for quite some time. And people from his entourage speak about this as well. Not publicly, obviously, that he is very much into, into psychic things. And there was even a talk of him consulting with a psychic who told him that if he changes the flag, that he has to change the flag if he wants to continue staying in power and to ensure his success. So it really has no practical reason at all. There was no real reason for him to change it. It was just, you know, he decided to make it happen out of nowhere, and that's what he did. Something like that we also see, I guess, in leaders of the neighboring countries. I guess the craziest being the Turkmen president, the older one, I mean, Berdimuhamedov, the father, whose initiatives are just kind of similarly illogical and cannot be explained by some practical reasons. So, yeah, it was just his хотелки. How do you translate хотелки in English? Just his want. It was just his immediate wish, and that's what he did.
Before I let you go, let me talk about, you mentioned the parliamentary speaker, Shakib. And what about the parliamentary procedure, right? They went before parliament and they had a chance to do it. Now, it passed on the first reading, but then when they had it needs to pass three readings. Can you tell me what happened in the second and third reading?
Yeah, well, the flag, this bill on changing the flag was actually adopted on the 19th of December, if I remember correctly. And it was adopted immediately during the second and third reading in this profile committee of the parliament. And on the next day, it was approved at the General Assembly in the parliament as well. There wasn't really much opposition to it. I mean, there was a few, I think, a very few parliament members that weren't fond of the idea, but it really didn't meet much opposition in the parliament.
Okay, then let me ask, isn't it parliamentary regulations, though, that between the first and second reading and second and third reading, there has to be a certain interval?
Well, there are certain protocols that needed to be followed, of course. But what can I say, with the Japarov's administration, any sort of decision making does not really follow any protocols or any laws, for that matter. Any decision making that we have been able to see during his past years of his rule demonstrate a complete collapse of the decision making system. And the, you know, approval and execution procedures are non-existent. And it seems that whenever anybody makes anything or does anything, you know, they don't even consult the law. They don't read what procedures there are in place in order to get it done. The problem is also with the execution. For example, if we use the example of the flag, okay, so they now have approved a new design of the flag. The problem is they were not even able to execute that task. They have they used one flag on the square, and they used another flag at the government buildings. And it turned out that the one that was put on the square had not 40, but 39 beams, rays, which obviously is an example of, you know, sloppiness at some stage of the execution of the decision. You know, this means it's a situation of complete unprofessionalism, inability to execute governance in a proper manner. And the reaction of the authorities to the criticism, again, from the citizens who have noticed this mistake was not that would be expected in a normal situation, in a normal country, where the executive was supposed to apologize if they have allowed such a mistake. I mean, it's a stupid mistake, right? Instead of apologizing, they went and took down the flag during the night when they realized that the people were chattering about this on social media and laughing. They took down the flag at night. They calculated the rays, and they've replaced the flag with the one that has 40 rays. But the problem is the one that they are using now is also different from the one that was approved by the parliament. These designs are not the same. These are different designs. You know, there is certainly the system is broken, and how they are going to govern for the rest of their term is certainly a big question when they're unable to execute things like this. I mean, what are they going to do with bigger issues is the question.
Okay, thank you. Admir, let me get back to you. You know, Lila had mentioned that Sportsman, for instance, said that they were going to continue to use the old flag. But there was a lot of other opposition from citizens in the country, you know, and the name Aftandil Jorobeka is one that comes to mind. Can you describe his situation and a little bit more about the situation, about the people's reaction inside the country on social network to the changing of the flag?
Well, yes. Aftandil Jorobekov, he's an activist, and he's been he's famous for making for stepping up and voicing, you know, social issues and addressing them to the government through protests and through, you know, engaging people on social media. And etc. And he was already arrested probably last year, I think, if I'm not mistaken, for some reason, for some political things. And then he was released, and then now he's been doing his, you know, governing, working with his social media page called Bespredel KG, which means Injustice KG, I think. Putting up, you know, posts and publications about all these dodgy things that are happening in the government, and he's the, you know, he also the, you know, kind of made a protest on social media and gained support on that regarding the changing the flag, and he organized a kind of two gatherings. So one was for to bring people to the square named after Gorky, where people usually go and, you know, tell things about what they don't like in the country. And the other thing was he was organizing an car driving, you know, thing to, you know, to show the protests against the changing the flag. So he's been dealing with that. And then because, of course, Japarov and his team didn't like it, he got arrested. And he's now in the prison, I think under the some kind of...
Can I also add a couple of words on him?
Yeah,
it's
please.
Interesting that, I mean, he's not just a blogger. He's not just, you know, the administrator of this Bespredel KG page on social media. And he's not just an activist. I mean, that's a person that graduated from the higher school of political economic research in Tokyo, in Japan. I mean, he's a pretty good professional when it comes to, you know, political economic issues. And so instead of taking into consideration the things that people like that say, because I mean, they might be saying good things, right? If you are, you know, if you're a president of the country or leading a country, leading some government agency, you probably want to listen to people like that, even if they are not a part of your cabinet. But instead of taking into account these opinions, when people are telling you this is probably not the best decision to do, I mean, to take, and this is probably not the best thing to do. So instead of doing that, the Kyrgyz authorities are resorting to old tactics that we've already seen in the past that don't work, of putting people in jail and on fabricated charges, as always. Which, yeah, sometimes really end in resulting in tragic situations, you know, of people spending lengthy time in prison for nothing, for just voicing their opinion. and their opinion is probably correct. So this is the hallmark of Japarov's administration, is they make stupid decisions. They don't want to listen to people that tell them that these decisions are stupid. And they're basically trying to destroy anyone and everyone, big or small, who are able or brave enough to say that what they're doing is just not what the president of the country should be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And also, coming back to the sports people, I would just say that, you know, most of them, they are, you know, it's a young generation. That sportsman, Jaloman Scharchenbekov, he is, I think he's about 20-something, 25, maybe 24.
Yeah, about there, I would say.
I mean, this guy, he was born in the, maybe 20 years ago, and he never saw any other flags of Kyrgyz Republic. This is the flag he was born with, and he loves this flag. He you know, did you know, took part in the competition, sports competitions, under this flag, and you know, he loves this flag as he loves as he would love his mom or his dad, or you know, nan or granddad. So, and the same actually with other people, with other young generation. So they don't really think that our flag looks, you know, quirky, odd, or you know, wrong. They we don't have these things in our minds. But you know, this is just all of a sudden, out of the blue, president comes up with this silly, stupid idea, saying, "Oh, I would like now today." I woke up, and I decided to change the flag. So this is what is happening.
Thanks. And, you know, I should mention, too, at this point that the head of the State Committee for National Security, Kamshibek Toshiev, after the athletes started to say they were going to compete under the old flag, using the old flag, I think his quote was, "Let them try," which was definitely seemed to be a threat. And also, I have to mention about Jorobekov, too, that he's facing charges of calling for mass unrest, right? For asking people to come out and protest against the flag and trying to arrange this auto rally against the new flag. They're charging him with calling for mass unrest, right? Okay. And I just want to do one more thing before we get to the middle of the program. I also want to mention what we'd been talking, that there was only 39 rays from the sun on the flag that they hoisted. And this made it all over social networks, right? And, you know, obviously it's a very embarrassing moment. The authorities have dealt with this very harshly, haven't they? I mean, the head of the presidential administration, Kenybek Tumanbayev, said that people should face charges for posting that there was only 39 rays from the sun. And in fact, the State Committee for National Security is calling people in, as my understanding is, calling people in for questioning if they saw that they were posting about this. Is that correct?
Yes, they have. There were at least five people, as far as I know, that were called in to questioning by GKNB in the last few days, I would say. And the reaction to criticism was quite harsh by the Erbia Kuronbekov and also the other members of Sadır Japarov's and Tashiev's team. And I think this reaction to criticism generally, I mean, it's not just the flag. They're just afraid of anybody opposing any of their initiatives, you know, whether it's a flag or anything else. This was their reaction to any criticism. And if we look at the cases of, you know, political persecution in the last couple of years, there were just so many cases. None of the administration was as effective in cracking down on the critics as Sadır Japarov and Tashiev were. There were the people that, for example, criticized their decision on Kimbirabad Water Reserve. There are still partially arrested and in jail and partially under house arrest. The people who criticized their flag initiative, we're yet to see what is going to happen to them, because they have said that they will open criminal cases against people posting anything on Facebook about this. I mean, this is becoming pretty scary.
Perfect. And that helps. It's a great segue into the second half of our show. But I want to remind that we're talking about the recent decision to change the Kyrgyz flag and what it says about the way Kyrgyzstan is governed. And my guests are Admir Kurman from Kyrgyzstan. But currently, Admir works in London as an innovation strategist, and he's a business founder. And Laila Saeed-Bek, the chairwoman of the NGO Freedom for Eurasia and a member of the working group advocating for a global every woman treaty to end all forms of violence against women and girls. Thank you. And Admir, let me get to you first. You had mentioned at the start that this was very similar to the way that they decided they were going to vote for a new constitution. And that's why I wanted to bring up this whole issue of the flag to begin with. This actually is a great example of the way this country is governed since they passed what was dubbed the Constitutia, right? Can you walk me through a little bit about what's changed with civil society groups, for instance, since the passing of this new constitution?
From the previous revolution in 2010, since then our country kind of took the path of towards the parliamentary democracy, and overall we adopted all the democratic values and worked on freedom of speech. Freedom of press and all these, other good things, to become even more happier and more free society. But with this president, I think it just went wrong from the beginning when he decided to change the constitution and make it more presidential, make our country more presidential rather than parliamentary. And that's, I think, where he went wrong. And of course, this allowed him to make our country or make himself more despotic and adopt all this, how would you say, authoritarian style of management. And of course, his friend, who is the leader,
the head of security, right?
The head of security, yes, Mr. Tashiev. He's a little bit kind of a despotic person, and this team of two despotic people doing and working well towards making our country totalitarian. Authoritarian towards this regime. And of course, this affected quite badly the civil society, and including those laws they have adopted regarding the NGOs to, the NGO bill that they adopted and other things. It all had a bad impact on civil movement. So I think it's degrading now. The civil society, the civil movement, it became less active. It's very obvious, by the way, at the moment. This is how we ended up.
Okay, thank you. I agree too. That's always one of the things that's puzzled me, is civil society. It was one of the backbones or one of the big main supports of Kyrgyzstan all these years. And Laila, I want to get to you too, and they kind of in the same vein. Now that, civil society, Kyrgyzstan long ago was dubbed the island of democracy. Now, the things that stuck up out of the ocean of authoritarianism that was around Kyrgyzstan was civil society, independent media, and a strong political, or at least vocal, political opposition. Can you talk a little bit about political opposition and independent media?
You mean currently?
Yeah, in the last 2 years.
Well, the problem with the opposition during this administration's term is that the most outspoken ones are in jail, and I mean there are some of them who are quite controversial, such as Beknazara, for example. But nevertheless, he is a very influential politician. And people remember him, especially people of the older generation. They know him. It seems that the opposition has been weakened by the last 2 years of the current administration's activities. And partially, it was done through use of criminal groups, of course, which have supported this administration from the start and actually have been instrumental in bringing Sadır Japarov to presidency. So during that time, during the past 2 years, Sadır Japarov and Tashiyev have pretty much crushed the opposition. They have opened numerous criminal cases against activists. And there are activists that have been in jail 2 years ago, for example, at the start of their term, that have been released and that have been put back in jail just, you know, in the last couple of months again. So they're just not, you know, not letting people to even raise their head at all. The way that they're clearing their field is quite ruthless. And we can also see that from the example of how their ally, Kulbayev, was removed from the field with just one swift stroke by Tashiyev. So, yeah, this is the situation with the opposition. Although I think the opposition leaders that are in jail currently, they still don't lose their spirits. They're still holding strong. They're denying the charges. With the civil society, the situation is more complicated because the current administration is taking steps to restrict their activities. They have already taken steps to limit the right to free assembly, for example, and made it basically impossible for people to gather for a protest, for a peaceful protest anywhere. You know, when, for example, before it was kind of limited to certain areas in Bishkek, now it's not even allowed in Osh. It's not allowed anywhere. So anything that looks like a protest, so even a small one, will lead to people, you know, being either called in for questioning by the gang or maybe lead to a criminal case. And people understand this. I think there is also a lot of fear in this among the citizens, among the activists as well, because this time it seems to be quite different. It seems to be different from the previous administrations. It's more violent. We can also see that from the deaths that happened in detention centers of people that have been imprisoned by this administration. I think there were so far how many? At least four now deaths of critics while in detention. And their methods are quite scary. So there is also a lot of self-censorship that I feel among the activists.
I just said, you know, that was, I had heard four. This was the fourth today.
When
we had the most recent death in custody. Okay, we're getting to the end of the show, but I want to ask the last question. I'll start with you, Lila, and then Admir, I will give you the last word after that. But we started with the flag because the big question here is, should we even be surprised at the way they've gone about approving this new flag? Or is this actually, like I said, this is the character of the government that we're seeing, and this is just further evidence of the way they intend to govern the country?
Well, this is just a demonstration that we have a petty tyrant leading the country right now. You know, someone who can make arbitrary decisions, not based on any, you know, practical need, or that there will be no substantiation for any of his decisions. He wants to do something, he'll do something. And there is nobody really who would question him, at least not in his entourage. In the way he approached the flag issue is just so ridiculous. Because I mean, from the very beginning, what he was saying, he said, you know, he started with this this really silly story of him being young and how he was sitting with his family and celebrating. And the flag was just adopted, this old flag, in 1991, and that there was this discussion among his guests that it was just a wrong flag and it needs to be corrected. So he decided to correct it. He didn't even provide any logical reason of why. And now we ended up in a situation where he changed the flag, but we don't know what is the final version of it, because there are several. There is one that has been adopted by the parliament. There is another one that was amended, edited by the cabinet. And then there is a third one that is hanging on the square. So, I mean, which one is it? And it's not a small issue, right? Because this is the issue of recognition of the country. This is a symbol of the country that will be used by other countries somewhere on international platforms. So which flag should be used, you know, for example, in the UN? I mean, who is going to clarify this? And it seems to be simple, but it's really not. And this is a demonstration of how the current administration is just unable to execute its functions in a proper way, where there will be no, you know, no confusion in such decisions. And I'm pretty sure that this is something that can be seen throughout, you know, across the board in everything they do.
Okay, thank you. Admir, we'll give you the last word then. What does this whole fiasco with changing the flag tell us about the current Kyrgyz government?
Oh, well, I think it's just a good, the best illustration how the Kyrgyz government, the current Kyrgyz government is working or not working. So it's a good, you know, the changing the flag and all these, you know, random things happened recently, a few days ago. They are just a good, they symbolize the current presidential regime. As I said, it all started from changing the constitution, and then they silenced the parliament, and then we don't know what money they are using, where do they take this money from. They never told us to build all these offices for the regional security offices in all other towns and cities. So we never know how much we earn from Kumto and from the gold, where the gold is going. We don't know anything. We don't know what's going on there. It's not transparent in terms of budgeting, in terms of, you know, the state budget, in terms of how much money we're making, how much money we're, you know, spending. We don't know how much money they are spending for their flights, on private jets. Where do they take this money from? We don't know anything. So this is a good illustration. The flag issue is a good illustration of how this government manages things and operates. And actually, I'm quite happy that it happened, as Leila mentioned, that they put up some one flag, and then it turned out that it was the wrong one, and then you know, all these funny things happened. I'm quite happy with this, because this is clearly showing for, you know, ordinary citizens how their beloved president, I mean those who support Japarov, how their beloved president you know, works and manages things.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you, Leila, and thank you, Admir, for being on the program. And a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back.